I'm Christopher Light, and this is The Connection. Our guests, Bob and Ellen Kaplan, say the turning of the millennium shows just how much emotion we can invest in a number. The yearly celebration of New Year's Day, they say, shows you that we all like to count. Marking each year, they would say, is a mathematical process of graphing a life across time. And it's something more, too. It's a connection to a parade of numbers that go on and on and on. And every new year then hides the infinite. Infinite possibilities, infinite time, infinite numbers. Infinity is one of the more mind-boggling areas of mathematics. But Bob and Ellen Kaplan find it fertile ground as a place to sow math seeds in the American mind. They've created a kind of Socratic method they call the math circle, founded on the idea that everybody has an innate affinity for numbers and that everybody can understand math, including long division, algebra, geometry, and calculus too. We're taking the talking cure for all our mathematical anxieties this hour on The Connection. The topic is infinity, and if that's not broad enough, we'll talk some about teaching math too. Connection listeners, can you recognize different sizes of infinities? Can you remember what math teachers led you to understand and how they did it? 1-800-423-8255 or 1-800-423-TALK makes the infinity connection with Bob and Ellen Kaplan. The possibilities, as we say, are infinite. Bob, where should we start on this infinity thing? It has just come back to me out of some hoary past that rolled over 8, which is hard to make symmetrical, but that double loop that stands for infinity. What about it?
Well, there was a French mathematician who said that infinity is just 8 blown over by a strong wind. But there's that wonderful, mind-boggling concept of the infinite, which we're all tempted to think about and then find, when we start to think about it, that we can't think about it. It's a blur at the end of the mind. And yet, there is a way of thinking about it, a way which I think was the greatest work of art of the 19th century, the work of a German mathematician named Georg Cantor, who showed us how to think about the infinite, how to find structure there, how to see, believe it or not, that there are different sizes of infinity.
Georg Cantor is new to me. Who he and how did he teach you? And how are you going to teach us?
Well, what he did was to think about these numbers that go on and on and to come up with a very, very simple way of thinking about them, a way which any third grader, which anyone can understand and which we'll talk about. Ellen and I learned about him by reading, and we have tried in our math circle to pass on the information, not by telling it to our students, but by having them discover it for themselves.
I think one of the brilliant things about it is that you don't start at the far end where it's scary and vague. You start where you feel completely secure and connected. Like, can we get from 1 to 2? If we can get from 1 to 2, we're on our way to go all the way that there is.
How do you get from 1 to 2? Thinking of infinity, or looking for the sort of the infinite connection?
I think if you go back to primitive man, if you go back to cavemen, or if you go back to when you were 4 years old, ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny. Counting is, it's practically Freudian. You have one thing after another. You like to see the pattern and the repetition, and you begin with the counting numbers, which are called the natural numbers, because that is the characteristic that they seem to have. And they are wonderfully evenly spaced, so that you can almost imagine a row of dominoes in front of you, and if you push over the first one, they go on out of the room.
And when does infinity occur in the sort of the natural growth of a child's mind?
This is an interesting question, because I know a 7-year-old who was asked, is there a last number? And she thought about it for a minute. The question obviously is there infinity or not in the numbers? And she said, oh yes, there is a last number. Oh good, what is it? She thought for a moment and said, 23,000. And the person talking to her father, a mathematician, said, well, what about 23,001? And she said, oh, well, I was close.
And she was. No, what it sounds like the kid asking his dad, you know, what does this earth rest on? And, of course, it's an even bigger earth. And then, I don't know, a year later, wait a second, what is that earth rest on? There's an even bigger earth down there.
It's turtles all the way down.
Yeah, exactly. That's the story. All the way, but the idea of all the way down is the hard one.
That's the hard one. And I think what this girl's father was trying to point out to her was that we can prove there are an infinite number of natural numbers, these counting numbers, just by saying, well, if there were a last one, add one to it, and you find it's not the last. That wonderful strategy of mathematicians, proof by contradiction, where you sacrifice not just a piece, but the whole game, and by sacrificing it, by saying, well, if this weren't true, then its opposite must be true. If there's a number that you can take as the last and add one to it and get a number beyond that, there must be no last number. There are an infinite number of counting numbers.
I quoted on The Connection before James Joyce's description of eternity in the sermon in Portrait of the Artist, sort of how long do you burn in hell if you burn forever, and he talked about the bird that took away one grain of sand every million years and flew an infinite distance and then came back, et cetera, et cetera. And by the time, you know, the bird had taken the whole beach, you know, it wouldn't have been a blink at the start of eternity. Infinity is a bit of the same idea. When did people start worrying about this? Sort of thinking, just how far could you go if you could go forever?
For those Indians with their enormous numbers, that great litany of names of larger and larger numbers that the Buddha recites his way through.
And that's 2,000 years old. I think this is something that obsesses every mind. How can you get your mind around? How can you wrap your mind around a concept which is about the endless? And it isn't until Galileo in 1638 that we first get a touch of a way to think about this unthinkable, to begin to give it a structure, a way which this wonderful man, Georg Cantor, then develops in the 19th century.
What did Galileo have to say about it?
In his two dialogues, he says, well, let me think. Here are the natural numbers going on. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and so on forever. What if we think about the even numbers? Every other one of those, 2, 4, 6, those go on forever. Let's remove those from the naturals. How many are left? Well, the obvious answer is half as many, because you've taken half of them away. So you've taken half of an infinite set away from itself, and you have only half of them left.
Well, what you have left is the odd numbers, and the odd numbers go on forever.
So this is very puzzling.
Half of infinity is infinity.
It seems to be, but that's too vague an idea. One needs a way, and Cantor came up with this way, of actually making sense of this, making rigorous, logical, mathematical sense of it.
And he did it how?
He did it, to start with, very much the same way that you set the table when you're too young to know how many people are coming to dinner, which is a fork for this person, a fork for this person, a fork for the next person, and so around the room. So it's called in mathematical terms a one-to-one correspondence. One person, one fork. You don't have to know the actual number of people or the actual number of forks as long as there's one for each. So if you can line them up in pairs.
You're starting to play games with my head now. I was just thinking, if you had an infinite table for an infinite number of guests, would you have room? Would there be enough places at the table if all of the infinite guests showed up?
What a good question. Have those guests at the door coming in. Let's get them into two lines.
I know.
You've got an infinite number of forks, infinite number of leaves in the table. You can expand it forever, and an infinite number of people who might show up.
You see, the difficulty of getting them in the room is spatial. But, imagine that wedding in Beijing, where the brides and grooms are marching into the great hall to be married on New Year's Day. You don't really know how many of them there are. They could be stretching out to infinity off camera. But as long as when they march in, there is one bride for every groom and one groom for every bride, you know that you have exactly the same number of each, whatever that number is.
So that if you have the natural numbers marching in one line, and the even numbers marching in the other line, and they're holding hands, the even number 2 with the natural number 1, the even number 4 with the natural number 2, and so on, oh my goodness, there are exactly as many of each as there are of the other, because they're all holding hands. Each even number is holding the hand of one natural number. Each natural number is holding the hand of one even number. Even though both sets are infinite, there are exactly as many in one as there are in the other.
I want to go back to the this infinite dining table with the infinite guest list. Should you worry about leftovers?
Out at the far end, you can imagine all sorts of monstrosities occurring, but not as you start going along. It's all perfectly regular. So it's regular as far as you can go, so it really doesn't matter what's happening beyond where you can imagine.
Let me put it this different way. You have an infinite series of numbers, and you take just the even-numbered ones, and you've still got an infinite series.
Mm-hmm.
How many sizes of infinity are there?
Wonderful question. And the answer is mind-boggling. There are more than an infinite number of sizes of infinity. The smallest. Frightening, isn't it?
I was afraid of that.
The smallest size infinity is the set of the counting numbers, and any set which has as many things in it as the counting numbers, like the set of even numbers. That Cantor called Aleph Null. The name he gave to that size infinity is Aleph, first letter of the Hebrew alphabet, with a little zero subscripted to it, Aleph Null, because he could see that there would be an Aleph 1, 2, 3, and so on.
So if the smallest infinity is the infinity of natural numbers, what's the biggest infinity out there?
There isn't one, but we can talk about bigger ones than that first one. We can talk, for example, a very good candidate for the next size, you'd think, would be the negatives and the positives put together, the counting numbers and their negatives. Seems as if there are twice as many, just the way it seemed as if there were only half as many evens. But put those negatives and positives in a line, 1, 2, 3 going on forever, and before 1, negative 1, and then negative 2, and negative 3, stretching back forever. But we can pair these up with the counting numbers.
But that's a harder thing to imagine, because it's easy to think that 2 goes with 1. I mean, you can even say 2 is the first of the evens and 4 is the second of the evens. So you hear the counting. But what do you do when you have going off to infinity in both directions? Where are you going to begin?
That whole problem, that whole starting problem, is the problem that comes when we try to think of the infinite. And Cantor's great solution was this: start in the middle. Pair up. In the middle of those negatives and positives, you've got 1 next to negative 1. Well, what if we pair 1 with the counting number 1, negative 1 with the counting number 2, 2 with the counting number 3, negative 2 with the counting number 4, and so on, going backward and forward, backward and forward, and we'll get a perfect matchup again of all the counting numbers on the one hand, the negatives and positives on the other. There'll be exactly as many of one set as there are of the other in this one-to-one correspondence.
We're talking about infinity and its many applications. It's history and mathematics. It's contemporary psychology. We're all familiar with that asymptotic notion of getting sort of halfway closer to our goal every year, say, or maybe even every day. Every day we cut the gap in half, but of course we never ever get there. The approach to the axis gets closer and closer and closer, but we never get there. How did we begin to think about infinity? In our own heads, in our child's heads, in our historical heads. 1-800-423-8255 makes the infinity connection. 1-800-423-TALK with Bob and Ellen Kaplan, who have formed their own math circle around the notion that everybody can learn mathematics, and we're all sort of thinking about these questions anyway. 1-800-423-8255. Why not learn what we're talking about? Robert Kaplan's book that we talked about last year is The Nothing That Is, The Natural History of Zero, dedicated to the memory, among others, of the late, great Mr. Zero, Frankie Brimsek, goalie for the Boston Bruins. How many playing minutes did he go without a goal?
3 hours, 51 minutes, and 54 seconds. Great man.
Mr. Infinity. Who would be Mr. Infinity? Michael Jordan or something?
He should be.
1-800-423-8255. They're talking about the blur at the end of the mind known as infinity. You talked about the natural history of, not, I shouldn't say the natural history, the sort of intellectual history, the migrating fascination, historically speaking, with zero, Bob Kaplan. What is the sort of cultural history of infinity?
I think you'll find the notion in every culture, in one form or another, religious, poetic, philosophical, psychological, mathematical. But always, when we get to the mathematical, it's blurry. We think, well, there's the infinite, and that's it. That's all you can say about it, that eight blown over by the wind. And yet, here, with this one-to-one correspondence idea, we can actually begin to give it structure.
We can even do a kind of arithmetic of infinity. We've just come up with the fact that half of Aleph Null is Aleph Null. If you took just the evens or just the odds, you got half of it. Well, that means twice Aleph Null is equal to Aleph Null. This is not sounding like our normal arithmetic. Suppose instead we pulled out the multiples of 7. Well, we could line 7 up with 1 and 14 up with 2 in the obvious natural way, and we would have that 7 times Aleph Null is equal to Aleph Null, which gives you a real feeling if you took any number and multiplied it by Aleph Null, you'd have Aleph Null, which it gives me very much the feeling that you're on slimy territory, that infinity is not in any sense a number. It's far more of a description of something which one can imagine, but which one certainly couldn't nail down.
How do you use it? I mean, people use, you add zeros, everybody knows that when you multiply by zero, you get zero. You can't divide by zero. What can and can't you do with infinity?
I think the essence is that mathematics is an art. It's an art that can be applied. But we're dealing here with something deeply artistic, something that goes to the structure of thought as well as the structure of the world. Is the world itself infinite in space, in time? We don't know. Conflicting theories of what the universe looks like. Is there an infinite out there? There certainly is an infinite in here, in our minds. We're talking about it right now. So I think that trying to elicit the structure of the infinite is a way of trying to elicit the structure of our own thought.
That's a preface to answering my question. You haven't answered it. How do we use it then?
I think we use it in itself, with other mathematical notions, as we try to arithmetize the infinite.
How do we arithmetize it?
Well, here we have this one size of infinity that we've been talking about, Aleph Null. We found various sets that have that size, not just the counting numbers, but the even numbers, the odd numbers, the evens and the odds put together, back to the naturals, the negatives and the positives, multiples of 7, multiples of whatever your favorite number is. But now the question is, could there be a set which is larger than that? First thing that comes to my mind is, well, what about the fractions? You were talking before about this halfway again, getting closer and closer asymptotically to your goal. That gives rise to the series 1/2, 1/4, 1/8, 1/16. Take that series. How many of those kinds of numbers are there? Well, you think just between 0 and 1, you have a dense jungle of these fractions, these rational numbers. Surely there are more of them than there are counting numbers. Surely this is a bigger size infinity. And yet, Cantor showed brilliantly, ingeniously, artistically, that it too is a countable set. Its size too is Aleph Null.
This is where we need radio visual aids, because if you can think of a sort of grid, like a piece of graph paper, and across the top row of it, you write all the fractions that start out with 1 on the bottom. So you have 1 over 1, and then 2 over 1, and then 3 over 1. Before I've said anything more, you realize we already have aleph null of them going across the top of our graph from left to right. Then down from 1 over 1, put all the fractions that have 1 on the top. 1 over 2, 1 over 3, 1 over 4. And down our first column, we already have aleph null of them. So I would think any betting man would say we were going to end up with a lot more than aleph null, especially if they hadn't been listening to the other shocks and surprises we've encountered so far. So fill up this grid densely. So the second row is 2 over 2, 3 over 2, 4 over 2, and so on. And the second column would be 2 over 2, 2 over 3, 2 over 4.
So every row, in other words, will all have the same denominators, the same bottoms. Every column will all have the same numerators. You'll eventually get all the fractions on here. 1937th, where's that? Oh, it's in the 19th column and the 37th row. But how could you possibly count these? How could you have them hold hands with the counting numbers? Maybe you can't.
Better graphs on the radio. Radio visual aids, it's known as the human mind, thoroughly capable of that, Ellen. And thank you for getting us started with this, with a sort of picture, a graph of infinity. 1-800-423-8255, the infinity connection with the founders of the Math Circle, Bob and Ellen Kaplan. Glenn is on the line.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for, or it's Christopher. Thanks for taking my call.
Welcome, Glenn.
One of the great things about being sick is being able to listen to your show.
That's what I found out last week, listening to reruns through the miracle of audio tape. Boy, it was good.
If we can keep the grid on the page, I wanted to talk about one of the elegant functions that I like to use, or I came upon when I was an engineering student, which is the impulse function, which, if you think of it, starting off as a 1x1 square, and you shrink one of the dimensions very small, but don't lose any of the area, you must increase the size of the other dimension. And as you shrink, and this almost like a balloon gets taller and taller and taller, as the dimension becomes zero, and you still want to say that you have the same amount of space, you've got this infinite height, but it still has an area of one, conceptually. And it's one of the great functions that engineers like to use. For instance, how do you go from a speed of 10 miles an hour to a speed of 20 miles an hour? Well, you can't do that. No one's got enough acceleration to do that unless you had infinity. But if you use an impulse function, we can dial in just the exact amount of acceleration we need to make that infinity move that infinitely fast. And that's one of the things that I think if you look at the endpoints, yeah, it's very difficult, but there are some intermediate points where infinity can be useful. And I'll take my comments off the air. Thanks.
Well, Glenn, that's a very nice point, and it's an answer to Chris's question of how do you actually use the infinite in real-life applications. What you've got there, that ballooning up square, that square whose area is 1, and as the base gets shorter, the height gets taller, that's very interesting because that gives us a way of thinking not just about fractions, but about all those points inside that square, of which there are a great many. You said, let's keep our grid on the mental screen. Our grid has 1 over 1 in its upper left-hand corner. Then it stretches out infinitely far to the right, infinitely far down. It's got all those fractions on it. We were puzzled about how we could navigate our way through this, how we could pick a first thing on the grid, a second. Well, when I was very young, my mother said to me, if you're going to clean your room, start in a corner. So let's start in a corner. Start with 1 over 1. Pair that up with the number 1. Okay. Well, now what?
Well, it seems sensible to move either across or down. Let's say we move across and we pick up 2/1 and call that our second. But we better not go on to 3/1 or we're chugging straight off to the right and we'll never be seen again.
We'll never pick up those numbers in the next row. Well, what if instead we go straight down from 1/1 to 1/2, 1/3, 1/4? Great, except now we're never going to move to the right of that. This seems impossibly difficult. Mathematics is play. Mathematics is an art. Cantor came up with the brilliant idea of not moving straight to the right or straight down, but zigzagging. Go from 1/1 as our first fraction to 2/1 as our second, and then zig down to 1/2. And then go down to 1/3, but don't continue going down. We've now got 4 fractions. 1/1, 2/1, 1/2, 1/3. Now, zag up, back to our first row. Pick up any fraction that we haven't hit already. Keep going in these 45-degree zigs and zags, and you'll get your pairing up. You'll get a first, a second, a third fraction. They won't be the normal ordering of fractions, from smaller to larger, but they will match up each fraction with a counting number. There are exactly as many fractions as there are counting numbers.
I got my little chart. Connectionists will be back with Bob and Ellen Kaplan talking about infinity. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston and PRI. We're funded by the listeners of WBUR Boston and by Sunday River Ski Resort, featuring 8 interconnected mountains, 126 trails to explore, and an extensive snowmaking system, sundayriver.com. And by the construction site, blocks and building toys for girls and boys aged infant to infinity. Toys with connections that snap, stack, screw, and slide together at constructiontoys.com.
To infinity and beyond!
I'm Christopher Lydon. This is the Infinity Connection with the people's mathematicians, Bob and Ellen Kaplan. They founded the Math Circle to teach everybody what they deeply want to know about mathematics. Talking about that, as he said, number 8 blown over by the wind, the old symbol for infinity, sort of the numbers without numbers. 1-800-423-8255 makes the Infinity Connection, or 1-800-423-TALK. Bob and Ellen, have you got a puzzler for connection listeners to solve as they're mapping that graph of fractions? Sort of something to chew on in the Will Shorts mode.
Yes, let's try this. Let's say you're the desk clerk at Hilbert's Hotel. Hilbert's Hotel is a very comfortable, roomy, spacious hotel. In fact, it has an infinite number of rooms in it. The rooms are, as you can imagine, numbered 1, 2, 3, 4, and so on. Well, all's well until the day when a busload of tourists arrive asking for rooms. There happen to be an infinite number of tourists in the bus. Fine, no problem. You put one in each room. Your rooms are now filled. You feel your job is over. Oh, but a second bus has just arrived. It has an infinite number of people in it. You don't want to turn them away. What can you do?
There's your question, connectionist. Is Ellen?
And assuming that you solve that relatively simple problem, then you look up and a little Volkswagen Bug has just arrived with your mother in it. Where are you going to put her?
Connectionists, the phone's 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK. Chris is calling from Peru, New York.
Yes.
Welcome, Chris.
Thank you. I'd like to know from your guests if they have any idea where the actual infinity sign is derived from. What it's derived from, or where it comes from.
Yes, that 8 blown over sideways, which the French mathematician Raymond Queneau said was caused by the wind. Actually, it seems to come from a Roman sign for an M, 1,000, pretty big number, but not infinite, with the legs of the M bent in sideways and then curled, tucked under, giving us that 8-like shape.
But if you'd like to be more romantic about it, if you look at, for example, the tarot cards, there is an enormously large number of infinity signs appearing in the paths of the water being poured from the two pitchers, in the hat of one of the mystical kings. I suspect it's a sign that had been around with some non-mathematical meaning earlier on.
Chris, thank you. 1-800-423-8255, the Infinity Connection with Bob and Ellen Kaplan. Jason is on the line.
Hi.
Hello, Jason.
How you doing?
Good.
I just have a basic question. One of the problems, I think, in comprehending infinity is in mathematics, is to just basically comprehend it seems to be one of the problems. And one of the dream I had once, I actually experienced a mathematical fractal where I saw patterns within patterns within patterns. And there are some animated fractals I've seen online, and they seem to be a good tool for it to actually comprehend what infinity may be. I was just actually looking for some kind of an explanation on what a mathematical fractal is.
That's a wonderful question. Think of a triangle, a nice equilateral triangle, and then put warts on it. On each of its sides, build a little equilateral triangle a third of the way along or halfway along, so it's sticking out looking like a ninja star at this point. Now put little triangles on each of those straight edges. There are a lot more edges you have to put little triangles on. Mm-hmm. Make the new ones smaller than the past ones. And now put little triangles on those little triangles and keep doing that. The coastline of your triangle turned into star, turned into warty star, that coastline is growing longer and longer. Of course, the area of the new figure is not getting very much bigger. Going back to Glenn's square that was elongating, the area is staying finite, but the edge is getting infinitely long. That's a fractal called the Koch snowflake.
Wow. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jason. 1-800-423-8255, the Infinity Connection. Betsy is on the line.
Hi. You were talking about negative numbers. Do people talk about negative infinity?
Well, that's a good question. The negative numbers stretch off to our left, let's say, toward negative infinity.
Considered negative infinity just going in a negative direction?
Yes, if you want to give a sign to a direction, we could say, okay, negative sign to the left and positive sign to the right. If we ask how many, that kind of talk about the infinite, there will be just as many negative numbers as there are positive numbers, and we call that new number, aleph null, which is neither negative nor positive, but how many kind of a number, a cardinal number.
Right, but the concept of negative infinity, regardless of negative numbers, has anybody spoken about that?
Yes,
spoke of it in terms of a direction rather than in terms of... there's this marvelous thing that you can do if you say, look at all the numbers that multiply together to make 12. And you suddenly realize it's not only 3 times 4 and 2 times 6 and so on, but it's also minus 2 times minus 6. And then you see that as one number gets smaller and smaller and smaller, the other will get bigger and bigger and bigger. Or, if you're multiplying negatives together, it's on its way to negative infinity. Hmm. So there is a rising and a falling to positive infinity and down to negative infinity.
The negative infinity is not zero.
No. Zero sits plunk in the middle of this huge array, the balance point of all numbers. What I tried in my book, The Nothing That Is, to do was to lure people into mathematics by looking at this pivotal number, this zero. But now we're looking out from it toward the horizon, toward the edge, since we're at the beginning of a new era.
We are indeed. 1-800-423-8255, the Infinity Connection. Dorothy is calling from Athena, New York. Hello, Dorothy.
Yes.
Welcome.
I'm a constant listener to your program. It keeps me away from doing the things I should.
Not a girl.
But I love it. I am not a mathematician. My family, half of my family, my husband, would understand you completely. You've lost me. But my simple way of picturing conceptually infinity, I have two mirrors that face one another and reflect back and forth and back and forth. And
the old barbershop game, right?
Perfect example of infinity. And I have one other question. I've heard my mathematical family discussing the ultimate prime number. Does that fit into your discussion or your concept?
Very good issue. Prime numbers, those numbers which have no divisors other than themselves and one, they too go on forever. There's no last one. And the Greeks, Euclid, proved this with a wonderfully beautiful proof 2,000 years ago, more than that, 2,400 years ago. There's no ultimate prime. There's no last prime.
How did he prove it?
He took all the supposed primes, supposing there's a last one. This will be a proof by contradiction. Multiply them all together. That gives you a number. Add one to it. That gives you a number. And that new number cannot be divided by any of the supposed primes. So it is either a new, greater prime, or it's divisible by some number larger than the supposed last one.
Prime number times a prime number plus one is a prime number?
If you take all the prime numbers that you suppose there are, up to the supposed last one, and add one to it, none of your prime numbers up to that point could divide that new number, because it would have to divide both parts of that sum, the one and the product to the left, but no prime number could. It will divide the left-hand part, but not the one. So you've created a new monstrous prime, or at least a number which could only be divided by a bigger prime than your supposed last one.
You go, Euclid. Good thinking. Good thinking. 1-800-423-8255 makes the Infinity connection with Bob and Ellen Kaplan. Dina is on the line. Hello, Dina.
Hi, Bob and Ellen. I want to thank you for running the math circle. My daughter is in it, and she likes it very much.
How does it work for her?
What did you say?
How does it work for her?
She likes it very much, although we don't like having to get up and drive her there on Sunday mornings.
None of us like getting up that early.
How does this work? What does your daughter think she's going to, and how has it made her a better person? Obviously it has.
Well, we both came from Russia, and we both went to math circles when we were kids. So it's just something that we expect our kids to do. And
interesting. Is this a Russian thing?
It's very much a Russian thing. There's a certain level of society that is just part of growing up there. It was for me and for my husband.
Paruski, how do you say math circle? What is this all about?
Matematический кружок. It's really the word circle really just means a group. It means a group of people that sit together and do something. There are circles, art circles. There is all kinds of circles.
Interesting.
And it's like a club. That's just the way they call a club.
And we took our name from those Russian math circles, though, of course, with the idea of zero being nothing and everything at heart, that from
right.
that circle, everything will develop.
Yeah, well, I'm calling, but I'm also a math teacher. I'm a math professor at UMass Boston. I teach discrete math, and a large part of my course deals with exactly the same issues you've been discussing, and it's a very popular course for the kids. So I go through the fractions, how many fractions are there, and we also show that it's Aleph Null, but instead of going zigzagging, I just tell them to look at the diagonals, and I find that's another nice way of approaching it, and I wanted to just mention, because what you have is you have infinitely many diagonals, but it's clear that, you know, each diagonal corresponds to numbers where the top and the bottom add up to the same value. So the first diagonal just has 1, 1, and that adds up to 2. The second diagonal has 2, 1, and 1, 2, which adds up to 3 for each one. And there's infinitely many diagonals, but each one adds to a number, and so there's clearly Aleph Null of them. And clearly the number, the size of each diagonal, the number of points on it, is finite. And so if the students know that any infinite Aleph Null size set where the elements are finite sets, then the total size also has the Aleph Null.
Dina, that's such a nice proof, and it brings up that diagonal idea, which is the essence of Cantor's greatest proof, his greatest contribution to mathematics, and I think...
It's to show that that the reals are not Aleph Null,
that
right?
The reals, that there are more real numbers, that there are more decimals than there are counting numbers,
right.
The next size of infinity.
We do that in class, too. Is that we show that in the class also, and it's also very popular with the kids. But the nice thing about doing it with diagonals, it generalizes to multiple dimensions. If you have three dimensions with each one being of size Aleph Null, then instead of looking at diagonals, you look at planes that go out from the origin, and the number of points on each plane is again finite, and again there's Aleph null planes. And so it's a nice way to generalize and to show that no matter how many axes you have, as long as it's a finite number of axes, and the size of each one is Aleph null, the total number of points is still Aleph null.
Dini, you're great. Little did we know we were sort of entering a little bit of old Russia in this math game. But all the better. Thank you, Dina, and all the best to you. 1-800-423-8255. Michael is on a car phone in Rhode Island.
Hi.
Welcome, Michael.
Thank you. First, I want to apologize, as I'm neither a mathematician nor a physicist.
Neither am I.
Doesn't matter. Nothing to apologize about.
But the question I wanted to...
Are you a lawyer?
No, I'm a physician.
Okay.
What I was thinking about, the question is this. I understand that numbers go on infinitely in either direction, whole numbers, fractions, etc. However, when we talked about time back in college, I would assume we can think of time as going on infinitely. But time, we learned, was not an independent variable. That we usually think of time in terms of space and time. And I'm wondering if numbers can be thought of in a similar fashion, that it has some, that is the observer, and is it, are these just an independent thing that goes on and on and on, or is it tied to something else, as in the case of time, space, and time?
Hmm.
I don't know if that makes any sense, that question to you.
Michael, thank you. Ellen, Kaplan.
Well, you might think of it as being two axes, so that along one line you have time marching at its infinite pace, and then on a rather more frightening axis you have space going on forever and ever. That nightmare feeling when you wake up in the middle of the night and wonder if you were at the edge of the universe and stuck your hand out, what would happen? I think in terms of mathematics, you're really talking about the same thing, but we can feel much happier about the infinite in time than we can about the infinite in space. Perhaps because we understand our local space so much better.
I think it's also not until Einstein that we begin to integrate the spatial and the temporal coordinates, and Einstein has us think in terms of space-time, although they are independent of one another, just as going ahead is different from going up.
Michael, thank you. 1-800-423-8255, the Infinity Connection. Ron is calling from Potsdam, New York.
Yes.
Hello, Ron. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm going to lower the level of the conversation quite a bit. In business, one of the measures of whether which investment you might choose from a variety of choices is to calculate the rate of return on the investment.
Right.
This looks like it fails when you get down to zero investment. But your rate of return is now infinite. And, of course, you can have two choices, one of which pays a higher return than another. And at this point, you have to be willing to accept that one infinity can be bigger than another.
Well, what's certainly interesting is that when you divide a number by ever smaller numbers, you get larger and larger outputs. If we could divide by zero, which we can't, we would get infinity as an output. When we're thinking about how many things there are, how many things in a box, and we say, well, if the box has all the counting numbers in it, or all the even numbers, or all the multiples of seven, or all the fractions, then we can say securely now, thanks to Cantor, that there are Aleph null, that size of infinity, of things in them. When we talk about the number of decimals, all of a sudden, because of this wonderful proof that we've talked about but not told you, Cantor's diagonal proof, that there are more, a larger size of infinity, more things in that box. I'm not sure it's the same as your different rates of return, but it is a different quantity of things.
Makes sense to me. I don't know, Ron, does it make sense to you?
Yes, but you started looking for how would we use this in the real world, and that's a calculation which we make often. And it's nice to know that when it does get down to zero, when we certainly can have a zero investment and a return on it.
Well, it would be very nice to have an infinite return.
On a zero investment.
Yes. Tell us how you do it.
Yeah, tell us when you've done it, Ron. 1-800-423-8255. Tom is on the line.
Hello.
Hello, Tom.
This is a question I've had since I was a child in school. It has to do with fractions. When we reach that point where the teacher finally reveals to us that no matter how small your number is, you can cut it in half again. And I asked the teacher, well, then what's the smallest of these little numbers? And she said, well, there isn't a smaller one because you can always make a littler one. But I pictured, well, in fact, I did it actually. I touched my nose with my finger. And I said, well, the direction of the distance between my nose and the finger is little, then littler, then littler, but then it becomes zero. So my question was, when did that distance stop being something and start being nothing? Because I thought that must be the smallest number.
Well, what you've done is you've just invented the calculus for yourself.
Oh, I didn't do too well in calculus.
Well, you have the essence of it right there, because you're talking about something which is on its way to zero.
Uh-huh.
Now, it can't ever be zero, but it can get as close to zero as half the thickness of a breath away.
Mm-hmm.
Or as vulgar people at MIT used to say, you line up the girls on one side and the guys on the other side, and they approach one another till they're close enough for all practical purposes.
But does that mean I can't actually touch my nose?
Well, there is actually a theory of chemistry which says that we're really not solid objects at all. We're sort of electron clouds.
Oh.
And so you don't have to worry about a car running into you. It's just the interpenetration of your electron cloud and its.
Well, when we advanced a little bit in school, then we got onto the subject of lines and dots on the line. And so instead of touching my nose, I advanced a point across the line when it crossed over a certain point and got onto the other side. So did it actually at some point encounter that point and become zero, or and start getting a distance on the other side of the point?
Well, that's very possible, yes. I mean, that can be done.
I am. Well, that's very interesting. Well, maybe I'll go back and study that calculus after all.
Or invent it yourself.
Tom, thank you. I'd like to get to one more call, but I want to get to the answer to your puzzler of Hilbert's Hotel. Infinite rooms and a bus with an infinite number of tourists, and then Mum shows up in a Volkswagen. What do you do?
Well, why don't I do the bus and Ellen, you do Mum? So here we have this new busload of people who have arrived. All your rooms are full, and you have an infinite number of new guests. Well, you do what we did at the very beginning of this program. You move each guest who's already there into a room with twice the number of the room he's in. Whoever was in one moves into two. Who was in two goes to four. Who was in three goes to six. And that's going to leave a lot of rooms empty. In fact, an infinite number of rooms empty. All the odd number rooms are empty. You move in that new busload of people into all the odd number rooms.
And just as soon as they settle, up drives Mum and the Beetle.
And, of course, you can't put her in the last room because that's unimaginable. But it's very simple to put her in the first room and everybody else just move up one.
You need a lot of bellhops and sort of maids in this hotel.
Yes, and
virtually infinite number.
And very thoughtful guests who are willing to get up in the middle of the night.
We didn't even quote Hamlet, who said, I could be bounded in a nutshell and count myself king of infinite space were it not that I have bad dreams.
And the infinite is a bad dream that's turning into a good dream as we begin to come to grips with it and see that it has a structure, that it's a human invention, like all of mathematics, mathematics made by humans for humans.
Bob and Ellen Kaplan, we enjoy the math circle. I wonder, would you come back and walk us through around or up and down the idea of the calculus one day?
Love to do that.
We would find it infinitely enjoyable. Thank you. We had help today from Walter Dixon, Rebecca Smuckler, and Kim Bichari. Our Y2K bug-free website is theconnection, one word, .org. Our website producer is Jim Norris. They would like to welcome into the Connection family the listeners of WKNA and KNQ in Memphis, Tennessee. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is the Connection from WBUR Boston. Funded by the listeners of WBUR Boston and by CSC Consulting, helping clients achieve business results through innovative consulting and systems integration solutions, and by Fair Market, providing e-commerce leaders with the power of online auctions, and now hiring across all functions at www.fairmarket.com.
Public Radio International.